record.
Hey everyone, welcome to today's episode. I am joined by Brian Keane today. If you're not aware of Brian already, he is an author, podcaster, speaker, business mentor, and father in no particular order. Brian was my first personal trainer, actually. I met Brian first 6 years ago in Galway City Gym, and it was a life-changing decision in many ways across the board. And it started really to develop as a person after that, with the discipline that was gained from my time with Brian, and it helped me develop in all aspects. And Brian, hello, how are you?
Carl, thanks so much for having me on the podcast. And man, it feels like, sometimes it feels like longer than 6 years ago, and other times I'm like, it feels like just yesterday when we were doing those sessions. Like, just to give everybody a little bit of context, this is how much of a beast Cahill is. The way I used to train Cahill, and I could only do this with a handful of people, and Cahill was the only one, hand on heart, that was able to do this consistently. I would do my workout in the morning, and then I would just bring Cahill through a version of that workout, nearly the exact workout with maybe adjustments of weights for that evening session, and he used to smash every single one of them. That's why you got in such ridiculous shape. Because you were just crushing those workouts. So just to kind of give you a bit of props on your beast mode and your ability to flick that on switch, just so in case people aren't aware, because I know you look great and you put up a lot of your content, but yeah, Carl doesn't mess around with his training either.
I think that I gave myself no choice really by having you there watching me do it, because I definitely didn't train like that by myself, that's for sure.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Sometimes all you need is just somebody that's either keeping you accountable. You know this in the online sphere, the one-to-one sphere, back when I did something similar, that if you've got somebody that's holding you to a higher standard, you're raising the bar of your workouts. And even when I could see you come in on other days when you weren't training with me, your workout intensity was so much higher than everybody else's, because your figurative bar of how to train was higher. So even if you did 80% or 70% of what we were doing in those workouts, your workouts were still ridiculously intense. And I think that's a good little thing for people to adopt, that if you have a trainer or an online coach or somebody that's able to really push you to the next level, you know, Cahill, I know you do this with your clients, it just moves your intensity level of your workouts higher. So even on those days when you're not feeling it, your workout is still better than 99% of people.
I think, yeah, I totally agree with that. And I'll give everyone a little tip as well. If you have a personal trainer at the minute and you want to do a session by yourself, go in while they're training someone else. Because knowing that they're in the same room as you is going to raise your own performance by at least that 10%.
That's a good... Did you do that when I was coaching you?
Absolutely, I did.
I was like, Paul's always in the gym. I never realized he's got like a copy of my schedule somewhere. It's like, right, I got to get at 1 o'clock. He's in with Sheila at 1 o'clock. I'm going to get in at that time.
Man, it works. It's effective.
It's a great tip.
Train like someone's watching that you want to impress.
Yeah, that's it. Like, that's how many times have you like done those extra sets when a girl you fancy comes in, or a guy you fancy, depending on your gender or sexual preference? It's like, it's worth an extra 10 kilos on the squat every time.
I'd say I would love to know how many sessions were finished, but once that person walked in, they went back and done twice the intensity.
It's so true.
Man, it's a real thing. Anyway, I'm going to try and try to take this back on
track.
I'm
completely derailing this interview.
Oh man, this is what we're here to do. I love it. So I just want to pick your brain on a few questions that I have. What are the most common frustrations that people have, and how do we overcome them?
In terms of context, it depends on, again, identifying kind of pain points and problems that people have. Like, to use just a common example, because I know you serve a lot of people in that weight loss, fat loss community, you know, male and female, specifically females, but males as well. And when it comes to kind of frustrations, one of the ones I see, the biggest one, and it's funny because I just had I was having a conversation with somebody on Instagram DM just before we got on this Skype call, and they were talking about weight loss. And one of the things that I've been preaching a lot on my channels recently for weight loss and fat loss, firstly understanding the difference between the two, which is kind of bread and butter stuff that I tell people about on my platform. So weight loss is reducing the numbers on a scale. That's weight loss. You're actually taking one weight and you're trying to reduce that number on a scale. That's the metric that you're measuring. Fat loss then is reducing the amount of fat in your body. They're two different things. So getting clear on what you're tracking first and foremost can be important. But after that then is the calorie deficit. Telling people that, look, if you want to lose weight and you want to lose body fat, you have to be in a calorie deficit. And this is one of these things, Cathal, and you'll connect with this, is one of the issues I had, and definitely one of my faults as a trainer, was I assumed and I thought that everybody understood calories in, calories out. Like, I swear to God, I'm embarrassed to admit this now, but for 2 years of my personal training journey, I assumed, because I was working with people such as yourself who had a good, you know, you weren't beginners. You were coming to me at a good level and I was just bringing you on to the next level. So when I started putting out online content, I assumed, for the, like, you go back and watch any of my content from 2014, 2015, I never mentioned calories because I assumed that people knew what a calorie deficit was. I'm like, I assume that people know that if you want to lose weight and lose body fat, the first thing you need to do is get into a calorie deficit. I'm like, everything else is then built upon that. It's like, if you want to save money, you need to understand how much money you have in your bank account. They're not, it's not dissimilar. And one of the frustrations I see with people, and I've been trying to bridge this gap on content, particularly recently, is making people understand that dieting and how you want to go about dieting and being frustrated with your diet is largely down to, one, not being clear what your goal is. So if your goal is weight loss or fat loss, firstly, are you trying to reduce weight? Which is a great idea if you are a boxer, a bodybuilder, or a bikini person that has to step on stage in a weighted category. You have to be a certain weight for a specific time. I'm then like, if that's your goal, you should 100% be tracking weight. If you're trying to look better, if you're trying to feel sexier, if you're trying to look better in your clothes, I'm like, you should be tracking your body fat. I'm like, you should be focusing on reducing the number in your body fat. So firstly, getting clear on your end goal, because it's very easy to get frustrated if you're tracking weight when you're actually trying to lose body fat, because you're using, you know, the analogy I use, and pardon the language, I'm not sure how much we can go on this podcast, but the analogy I use is like, you know, measuring how good you are in bed with the number in your bank account. I'm like, you're tracking one thing here for something, a metric over here that makes no relevance to how good you are in bed. And that's the same at weight loss and fat loss. So getting clear on the end goal, because if you're not doing that, you're going to get super frustrated. And then after that, realize that the pyramid of prioritization when it comes to fat loss, for the most part, is a calorie deficit. So regardless of how you get that deficit, it's totally up to you. You can get it with a keto diet. You can get it with fasting. You can get it with flexible dieting. You can get it with a vegan lifestyle or a vegan diet. It's totally, nearly irrelevant how you do that. Now, how you feel, your energy levels are going to be very different. Your cravings and adherence are going to be different, because if you're doing flexible dieting where you're having a chocolate bar every day, that's going to be considerably easier to stick to in a calorie deficit than, say, something like the keto diet, where you're massively restricted on food and the majority of your dietary, most of your macronutrients is coming from dietary fat. You're reducing your protein and you're eating very little carbohydrates. And it's not that that's not a good diet. It can work tremendously well. Like, I'm a big fan of the keto diet for epileptics, and I'm a big fan of the keto diet for endurance athletes. I'm like, it can work really, really well. But if you're Sally or Sheila trying to lose weight, I'm like, don't go on the most restrictive diet out there to try and lose weight, when all you really have to do is get into a calorie deficit. So when I see frustrations with people, it normally comes down to one of those two things. In the most case, when it comes to, say, body composition, it's not being clear on the goal, if it's weight loss or fat loss, number one. And then the other main frustration is not knowing what's the best diet to do. And the answer is, it's not about the diet, it's about the basic foundation principle of nutrition, meaning that your calorie deficit means you consume less calories than your body needs. Your calorie maintenance is the amount of calories you need to stay the exact same weight. A calorie surplus is the number above that. A calorie deficit is any number below that. So if your calorie maintenance is 2,000 calories, assuming you eat those 2,000 calories every single day, that your body weight's going to stay around the same, your body fat's going to stay around the same. Now, there's lots of other factors, training, metabolism, etc., but just bread and butter basics for the 99% of people. And then if you eat 2,500 calories, that's 500 calories of a surplus. If you eat 1,500 calories, that's 500 calories of a deficit. Knowing that and understanding that very basic principle can allow you then to go and do any sort of diet you want. If you want to do a keto diet, you can. If you want to go with Slimming World, you can. If you want to go with a juice and bar diet, by all means, you can. You know, it will work. You'll be in this deficit. But if you're not able to stick to it long term and you're just going to rebound back afterwards, that's just going to compound frustration. So what I would generally advise people to do is identify what's your cause of frustration now. Is it because you don't know what your goal is, or is it because you don't know what system you need to do in order to hit that goal? Because once you bridge that gap, everything becomes considerably easier from that point onwards.
That's fantastic advice, Brian. And that ties me into the next thing that I wanted to ask as well. So we've established the person's goal and we've made them aware now that it's fat loss that they're after rather than chasing weight loss, which is the number on the scale. So what advice would you give to someone who doesn't know where to start?
So somebody that's coming from a school of thought where tracking weight is their measure, is their metric that they use. So one of the fallacies or one of the mistakes that I think the internet, I don't know if the internet compounds this or makes it better, I haven't decided yet, but because weight loss is what people think they should be tracking, that can be the default that people use. So they'll consistently step on a scale, and we always hear about weight loss, I've lost weight, you've lost weight, but understanding that it's a very different thing to fat loss is important, because then you can put in new tracking metrics that can help you potentially get in better shape and look better. So what I would advise for somebody starting is understand the difference between weight loss and fat loss, like I've said. And if that connected with you and you're like, okay, I understand that weight is the numbers on a scale. You step on a scale at 60 kilos, and if you step on a scale 6 weeks later and you're 55 kilos, you've lost 5 kilos of weight. You haven't necessarily lost 5 kilos of body fat. You could have lost 5 kilos of water. You could have lost 5 kilos of stored glycogen from carbohydrate. You could have lost 5 kilos of muscle. Like if you get sick for several weeks and are on bed rest, you're going to weigh less because you lose your muscle mass and lose any lean muscle tissue you have. So you're going to weigh less, but that doesn't take into consideration your body composition, how you look. Fat loss does though. So when you're tracking body fat and trying to adjust your body fat, your best feedback, and this is, I'm biased, even though there's lots of different ways to do this. And if you have access to a lab, by all means, go and get a DEXA scan and get scanners that will do this for you. But I'm biased towards clothing and how your clothes are fitting and photos. I'm like, they're generally your two best, and I'm going to get into the more scientific ones you can use, but for general population people, I think that's the best approach to use, because photos, for the most part, they don't lie. And one of the problems with changing body composition and versus a scale is you can step on a scale every day and it gives you a number instantly. It's instant feedback, and you can see if that number's gone up or down. And that's a positive and a negative thing. The problem with that is that the feedback is so instantaneous that it conditions people to continually check it. So I get where the addictive nature of being addicted to scales. I did a video on my IGTV and YouTube about, are you addicted to scales? And it's down to that positive, you know, that dopamine hit of getting instant feedback, instant gratification on, I step on the scale, I get the feedback. Whereas when you look in a mirror, you don't necessarily really see that every morning. You don't see your progress, because you could be changing, losing body fat in your bum, losing body fat in your hips, losing body fat in your stomach, your lower back, and you won't see that morning to morning, but photos will track that. So when you take your photos, say every week, what I generally do with people that come through my programs is take a photo in the same conditions every single week, from week one to week six, week one, week two, week three, week four, week five, week six, same conditions, same lighting, you know, first thing in the morning on a Friday, same day, same lighting, same conditions, everything, so that you can see how somebody's body composition is changing. So understand that one of the reasons you can be addicted to the scale is you're getting that instant feedback. Whereas when you look in the mirror or you take a photo day to day, you might not necessarily see that. You would need to do that week on week. So when it comes to tracking it, taking those photos and then checking how your clothes are feeling, like clothing, reducing numbers on a scale doesn't indicate how you're necessarily going to feel. Like you go into any clothing shop, Penney's, Elvery's, Lifestyle Sports, wherever it is that you buy your clothes or gym gear, like none of those measurements or clothing sizes are in weight. They don't say you can wear this t-shirt if you're 60 kilos. It's small, medium or large, or, you know, size 4, size 6, size 8, size 10, size 12. It doesn't say 50 kilos. It doesn't say 80 kilos. That's not how clothing works. So using that, oh, my jeans feel looser, my dress is fitting me better, my t-shirt is a little bit tighter if you're a guy, you know, and you're feeling a little bit more confident in the way that your appearance is starting to change, that's a better metric than using a scale, because you can lose a lot of weight. Like I tell people all the time, like I can drop somebody 5-6 kilos in a couple of days if I really wanted to. Like I've had to do that with people when I used to prep them for shows. It's not ideal and it's not a healthy thing to do, but you can do it. Like you load somebody's water and then you pull their water, meaning that their body excretes all the excess water that they have. So water, retained water, is going to make you weigh more on a scale. Carbohydrates are the same. You eat carbohydrates and you get stored muscle glycogen, you're going to pull in more water underneath the cell, which is going to make you weigh heavier. That's not going to have any effect on your body composition and how you look, but you will weigh less on a scale. You know, cut all your food. Like one of the things people ask me, and I always give this smart ass answer, but then I'm always have to expand on it. When people are like, what's the fastest way to lose weight? I'm like, drink a load of water, then stop drinking it, train 7 hours a day and stop eating any food. I'm like, that's the fastest way to lose weight. I'm like, that's it. That or go into a concentration camp. I'm like, you know, I'm like, that's how you can do it. I'm like, if that's the fastest way, they're like, oh, that's not what I'm going to do. I'm like, well, that's not what you asked, though. I'm like, if you flip that question and that wording to what's the most efficient way, I'm like, then my answer changes. My answer changes to get into a slight calorie deficit. My answer changes to look at your lifestyle factors and your sleep and your recovery, your food choices, your training. You know, focus on, if you're not a big fan of exercise, focus on niche activities, you know, non-exercise activity thermogenesis, walking more. You know, I'm recording this podcast from a standing desk, standing desks. You know, all these things add up. And that's the most efficient way to lose body fat versus the fastest way. The most efficient way to lose weight, if we're using those two words interchangeable, because people do, even though they're different things, but I'll use them interchangeably from this point onwards, just so people understand. And tracking that measurement, photos and your clothes are going to give you the best indicator of progress. And then after that, I like measurements. I like body fat calipers and measurements. I know we used to do this with you briefly, because your body, photos and how you looked was always number one, even with you as a guy. I know it's females we're talking about, but guys as well, it's the same thing. Body fat calipers and measurements, because what body fat calipers do is they obviously test your body fat levels. And then what measurements do is you measure your arms, you measure your chest, you measure your legs, you measure your hips, and you can see if those measurements are reducing. Or better, if body fat is reducing and those measurements are staying the same, that means you're losing body fat. So if you're measuring, you know, whatever, 20 centimeters on your arm, for example, and that measurement stays the same, but the body fat number on the calipers is dropping, that means that you've either maintained or built lean muscle tissue and reduced body fat. So if you're a personal trainer or a coach, you can potentially do that with them, or you can potentially take those measurements yourself. But they're secondary. Like, if I'm being completely honest, I don't even do that with the people on my programs. I get them to use their photos as number one, and then their clothing and how they feel, number two. I'm like, because it's well and good. I can give anybody a plan of chicken and broccoli for 6 weeks and they'll look tremendous by the end of the 6 weeks. But what happens after that then? They'll end up binging back on other food and they won't be able to stick to it and sustain it. And I don't base any of my programs or any of my philosophy on that. It's all about, right, what can we do that you can stick to? What is going to help you get to your end goal that is sustainable for you? And then we just double down and we make iterations to that nutritional plan based on what works for the individual. Because anybody can get in great shape by eating chicken and broccoli. You know this, Cathal, from competing. Like, you know, it's just not sustainable. Like, you can get really lean, you can get in great shape as a guy or a girl by eating salad 3 meals a day for 6 weeks straight. Like, you'll lose a load of weight, but what happens after 6 weeks? I'm like, life isn't about being on one big diet. Life's about finding a nutritional plan that you can stick to. You know, my entire philosophy on nutrition is find a plan that includes foods that you enjoy, that fits into your lifestyle and schedule, and that's in alignment with your goals. And whatever it is that you do that fits that criteria is going to work wonders for you in your body composition and losing body fat. And then tracking it, just put your photos or use your progress on your photos, because that'll give you a great indicator, because then you'll be able to see your progress, because you don't see that every morning. As I said, the advantages the scale has versus the mirror is you don't necessarily see the progress every day because you're too close to it. You know, you're too attached to it. We don't see our own progress for the most part, whereas the scale is this thing over here that's giving us feedback regardless. The number is going up, going down, or staying the same. So it's instantaneous. So it's very easy to get addicted to that, but it's not the best way forward unless you need to make weight for a fight or make weight for a bodybuilding show or a competition or an MMA fight where you actually have to weigh 60 kilos, 70 kilos on a specific day. Then by all means, track the weight. But if you're trying to look better, if you're trying to feel better, track your body fat, because that's what you're trying to achieve. That's what you're trying to do. And you want a tracking measurement metric that's going to work in alignment with your end goal.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. I think that the methods of tracking is usually dependent on the person, I would love to send everyone up to Galway Primary Care and have them do the DEXA scan, but that's not realistic for everyone. But someone who has a high body fat percentage doesn't need me grabbing them with the body fat calipers then to tell them that they need to lose body fat.
I'm going to play devil's advocate there, just, and I'm sorry to cut across here, but I want to. There's one more point I wanted to add there, just because you triggered it there with what you said. This metric system is going to be dependent on the person and starting point. So I would say if you're, when I talk about not tracking with the scales, I'm talking about everyday Jane, Sally, John, Joe. If you're overweight or obese, the scales work great. If you have 100 pounds or 200 pounds to lose, the scales work really well because they're a good indicator of progress. So just to play devil's advocate on that, one of the things I regularly say on my podcast, like, it's not the tool. Like, a scale is a tool, you know. It's the same as a hammer. A hammer is a tool. You know, you can use a hammer to hammer in a nail in a wall, or you can use it to hammer yourself in the dick with. I'm like, it's a tool. The importance is how you use it. And a scale is exactly the same. It's not the scale that is the problem. It's how you're using it. If you're overweight or obese, then as you said, you don't want to be going with a coach or a trainer tracking your body fat, because that number is going to be really, really high. And if you're obese, that number is going to be off the chart. It's actually not going to track on a calipers because it won't be able to track it. So a scale works really, really well there. But for 80% of the population who aren't overweight or who aren't clinically obese, using the scale isn't the best form of tracking. So sorry, I didn't mean to cut in on your call, but I just wanted to add that just because I think it's valuable for people listening to realize that it's the tool that's important, and how you're using it and your starting point is going to be an important factor in deciding what it is that you use to track your own progress.
Yeah, absolutely, man. A total agreement with that as well. It's exactly a tool and it's not the be all and end all. It's important for people to realize that, because for a lot of people, they're a slave to the scale almost. And as you said, when we look at ourselves in the mirror, it's hard to quantify daily changes there, because it's like needing a haircut. You don't realize until it's long. You don't notice it growing day by day.
And that's it. And that's the where people can get caught up, is because we never see. And I, again, it's a completely different side of the spectrum, but I remember even when I used to compete in bodybuilding, you never saw your own progress because you're too close to it. You don't see how your body fat is reducing or how your muscle mass or lean muscle tissue is increasing because you're too close to it, where photos give you a better feedback. So utilizing those as a tool can be very, very helpful.
Yeah, totally. Where do you think that coaches fail their clients?
I can't really speak about other coaches. I can speak about failures that I've had that I've learned from, and probably the biggest ones for me, because I can't really put words into anybody else's mouth, but when it comes to some of the common mistakes, and I'll take this from two approaches, because one is the mistakes I made myself as a coach and as a trainer, and then the other is as somebody that works a lot, as you said at the top of the podcast, as a business mentor with personal trainers, with fitness people, I see a lot of mistakes that they make that I try and encourage them to kind of just see things from a different angle. And when it came to me, one of the mistakes I made was applying my personal philosophies too much to the people I was working with. So what that looks like, and this is probably the biggest mistake I see with other coaches because they do something similar, is just because a strategy or a system works for them as an individual, they think it works for everybody. And I've made that mistake, and I still see it regularly with coaches, to answer your question directly. So what that looks like, and me and you have had this discussion, you know, countless times over coffee when we've met, etc., is one of the things I used to do myself that was a mistake was I was a big fan of, you know, clean food, nutrient dense food. And I still am personally, you know, but there's things I do in my personal fitness philosophy that I would never do with clients. You know, like if I'm training for a 100-mile ultra marathon, I'll drop in and out of ketosis because it'll help, the fat adaption will help me run 100 miles. Whereas I would never apply that with somebody that was, you know, 20 pounds overweight. I'm like, I'm not going to put a strategy that I struggle to stick to. And I'm quite self-disciplined when it comes to my nutrition, and I struggle to stay in ketosis, even though I feel amazing when I'm in it, because it's just so restrictive. I'm like, you can't go out for meals with your family, you can't go for drinks, you can't eat any chocolate or ice cream or cake, and I love fucking chocolate ice cream and cake, and you can't eat any of those things. So to put somebody that's already overweight and struggling with their weight as it is on the most restrictive diet doesn't tend to work. And a problem a lot of coaches make is, and this comes in lots of shapes and forms, is because something worked for them, they think that it works for everybody. So you'll see this online is really bad for this. One-to-one training is not as bad, because one of the beauties of working online or working one-to-one with people in the flesh, and I know this and you know this from when we used to do it, is you're seeing people every day and you're seeing lots of different types of clients. So I would be doing one thing with a Cahill Savage, but I would be doing a completely different strategy with Sheila or Sharon, because they had completely different goals and were at completely different levels. One of the problems what happens with online coaches is they get very married and dogmatic to their approach. So if you're a vegan coach, you only can see things from a vegan lens. If you're a keto coach or a fasting coach or a gut microbiome coach or a bodybuilding coach or a endurance coach or whatever, you see everything through that lens and you think that that fit is what works for everybody, and it's not. The problem is, it works for some people, and if you can bring those people into your program, fantastic. If it doesn't, then those people shouldn't be coming into your program. Like, it's like a, you know, a square peg in a round hole. I'm like, square pegs work great in square holes, but they don't work so well in round holes. I'm like, certain systems and certain dietary approaches and certain training systems work fantastically well. And to be honest, Cahill, most of them do work. Like, if you go to a reputable coach and a reputable trainer, such as yourself, such as me, you know, there's countless others out there. You know, Paul Dermody's been on your podcast. There's other great people, Joe Wicks, James Smith, like people that are putting out content in different areas and different programs. And people will ask me, you know, what's the best program? You know, or why is your program better than this person's, or why is their program better than yours, or whatever. And I'll say the answer isn't that they're better or worse. I'm like, the program that's going to work the best for you is the one that you stick to. I'm like, it's the one that you adhere to, because any reputable coach knows the bread and butter basics of getting in shape. And then after that, it's about testing to see who's a good fit for you, because if you're a square peg, you don't want to go into a round hole. You want to find a square hole, because that's going to be a better fit for you. And I think as coaches, it's important to realize who your square pegs are. Like, who can you help the most? Like, one of the things I pride myself on my business and my programs, because they're overlapped, is if somebody asked me about my program, my GA Lean Body program or my BKF online program, you're familiar with both my programs. So GA program is just, it's GA specific body composition program. My BKF online program is my general fitness program, weight loss, toning up, muscle building, etc. And one of the things I pride myself on is if somebody asks me, should I come through your program, and they're completely outside of the fit of the program, I will tell them no. I will be like, no, you won't get benefit from this program. It's not for you. But equally, if somebody comes in and they're like, look, I want to, you know, educate myself on nutrition. I want to get a little bit more tone. I want to lose body fat, but I don't want to give up my weekends. I want to do a little bit of flexible dieting at the weekend. I'm like, yeah, the program's going to work tremendous for you. I'm like, because that's who it's for. But if somebody comes to me on the flip end, that's, you know, a 0 to 1, you know, what I call people that don't know calories from cupcakes. And there's nothing wrong with that, but that's how I define them. Some people have no knowledge on exercise and nutrition, and they ask about my program, I tell them not to come through it. I'm like, you need somebody that's going to work with you individually, one-to-one, that can work on the psychological side, the behavioral aspect side around food. I'm like, they're going to serve you so much better. The same way as if somebody comes into my GA program who's an intercounty player and they're like, look, I just want to get stronger and fitter for the intercounty season. I'm like, look, don't come through my program. I'm like, because there's a body composition element of my program. I'm like, I'm serving the people who are trying to get fitter, trying to get faster, trying to get stronger, and trying to get leaner and change their body composition. I'm like, that's my program. It's called the GEA Lean Body Program. I'm like, you need a strength and conditioning coach, and somebody, and I'm a strength and conditioning coach, but you need a strength and conditioning program that's specific towards just improving performance. So one of the things that, and I've, you know, you're very good with this as well, is be clear as a coach on who it is you can help, and be clear as a coach on who it is you can't help, because that allows you to focus more on understanding the market and the square pegs that can fit into your square holes, because you'll do so much better as a coach and realize that not everybody and not everything you do is supposed to fit every single person. You know, there's only a few trial and tested things that work. Calorie deficits for people that are trying to lose body fat. increasing protein and potential calorie surplus for people trying to build muscle, focusing majority on compound lifts for people that are outside of injury prevention and rehab or bodybuilders. Like, there's certain principles that most people can apply and will work well for most people, but as a coach, it's very important to understand. And as the person that's listening to this potentially that is considering signing up to a coach, whoever that coach is, it might not be either of us. It could be someone in your local gym or somebody else online, but understand that there's different fits, and it's up to you as the potential client to do your due diligence on who it is you're about to work with to make sure they're a good fit for you, because then that can be wonderful. Like, one of the reasons we did so well together, Cathal, was because we were so aligned. You know, you were a perfect client, and I've said this to you countless of times, like, literally, you listen to everything, but you also question things, which is like that best, that 80-20 approach for... You would do everything I told you to do, but you would ask me why you were doing it if you were unsure. And I'm like, that was a good way, because you were learning. That's why you're such a successful personal trainer now and an online coach now, because you were, I've seen that principle, and you, that's what you do with people. It's, you're encouraging them to build the trust. You're building that trust with them on the front end so that, that they bought into you from the get-go, but you're getting people to ask questions about why they're doing something, then you're educating them as they go along. That's a perfect fit, but that doesn't happen automatically. You know, sometimes you get lucky in the case of me and Cathal, but it doesn't always happen. But you can take ownership and responsibility for that as the potential client by looking into trainers and seeing what's going to be a good fit for you. And then as the coach on the other end, being very clear on who it is you can help and who it is you can't help.
Yeah, totally agree. Like, the, if you're looking for a coach, is to look at, is that person speaking the same values as you? And have they done it before? Do they have proof that they've done it before? And it's worth having a conversation with that person before you sign up and seeing, is it a good fit? Brian, is there one book or piece of advice that was a light bulb moment in your life? And would you mind sharing it if there was?
Yeah, I've had a lot, you know, like I'm a vivacious reader. Like I read a lot, you know, I've got 400 or 500 books in my library at home. So to pick one would be very, very difficult. But I do have a couple of more so principles. One of the things that I noticed from books is if you're reading the right books, and I listen to a lot of audiobooks and I read a lot of physical books, you tend to see the same message. You know, in Jack Canfield's books on the success principles, one of the first chapters in there is success leaves clues. And one of the things that I see so regularly in personal development books, books on Stoic philosophy, books on business, books on nutrition, books on training, is there's the same message, it's just been said in different ways. And the biggest take home I have, and I'm going to completely, and there's no way to not sound like a twat when I say this, because the subtitle of my Rewire Your Mindset book is Own a Control of Change It. But the main premise from personal development books that I read was they were all telling me to take responsibility for what it was I was doing in some way, shape, or form. That came in different forms. You know, some people were like, you need to own it. Some people were like, you need to take responsibility for it. You know, some people were like, you need to focus on the law of attraction, power of intention, you know, and then take responsibility and put the action steps in place. There was lots of different wording based on the books I read. But the one underlying principle that was coming through all of them was nothing changes unless you do the work. Like, nothing. It's all about taking responsibility. And one of the things that I try and do with people I work with in business, people I work with in my programs, is give them full ownership of what it is they're doing. Because this works in a couple of ways. And as a coach and as a trainer, you tend to set this up on the front end. And if you notice on my thing, on my platforms, Cathal, and I know you do this as well, is anytime anybody says anything nice about coming through my program or my online courses or anything like that, they'll always say, got tremendous results. And they, you know, you've done this. You know, I know you've done this where you're like, man, Brian's an amazing coach. You know, I remember you gave me, when the first time we got you ready for a photo shoot, you were like, man, thank you so much. This was all because of your help. I'm like, no, it wasn't. I'm like, this is because you've been training your ass off and you've been dieting. I was like, Cathal, I didn't do any of those workouts for you. I didn't prep any of those meals for you. I'm like, you did that. And you're like, yeah. I was like, that's a good point. I'm like, yeah. I was like, you did all that work because you took responsibility for it and you took ownership for it. And the same trend comes through with anybody I work with in a business capacity or fitness capacity. The people that do the best are the people that have taken responsibility for it. Yeah, we're the coaches and we're their guides. Like, you're helping people and you're going to massively shorten their learning curve by working with the right coach or working with the right trainer. That's what they're for. But at the end of the day, they can't do any of it for you. And making it clear on the front end that people will ask me how, you know, I got a DM 2 days ago from a young guy about one of my programs. He sent me one of the before and afters that were on my website, and he goes, I want to look like this guy. He goes, what program do I need to do to look like this guy? I'm like, it's not about the program. I was like, it's about the discipline and the approach that you take. I was like, one, I can't tell you how well you're going to do in a 6 week period. I'm like, there's genetic factors, there's discipline factors, how well you can stick to it. There's so many things that are going to come into play. But what I can tell you is we can get some basic principles set up that will help you going forward. And if you keep applying them, your body will respond in a very positive way. I'm like, that's the honest truth. I'm like, but nobody's going to do this for you. I'm like, I'm not going to eat any of your meals. I'm not going to do any of your training sessions. I'm going to guide you, and I'll help tell you what's the best thing, what to avoid, the pitfalls to avoid, and adopt nutritional strategies that will potentially help you. But I can't do any of it for you. Cahill can't do any of it for you. Nobody else can do that. And one of the trends that was in every single personal development book that I ever read, ones that were worth their salt, I've read some fucking shit ones as well, is that they were taking ownership and taking responsibility. And that's what I wrote the Rewire Your Mindset book, and that subtitle, Own It, Control It, Change It. Like, my whole philosophy for fitness, my whole philosophy for mental health, as someone that struggled with mental health, is you have to own it and take responsibility for your starting point. You know, one of the things I talk about in my books and on podcasts is my issues with anxiety. I'm like, until I took ownership of the fact that you have this type A personality where you can't switch off your brain and you're in this state of, like, I would get analysis, like complete paralysis from anxiety, you know, and it was crippling at times. But until I took ownership of that, it wasn't in my control. And then when it was back in my control, I'm like, all right, cool, you have a problem. Now how can we fix it? It was back in my control, and then I could change it. And I think that goes for people's nutrition, that goes for people's training, that goes for people's mindset, that the one take-home message that you will see in all of these books, for the most part, is you have to take responsibility for your actions. You have to take responsibility for what it is you're doing, because when you do that, it's in your control, and when it's in your control, you can change it. And I think that's probably the biggest take-home that I've got from the books that I've read.
That's excellent. I think a good sign of a coach is when they make the client the main star of the movie.
Agreed. The guide versus the hero. That's one of the things I preach about in my online course. I'm like, you should never, as someone's coach, be the hero in the story. You should be the guide. You know, you should be the Yoda to the Luke Skywalker. You know, you should be the Haymitch to the Katniss in the Hunger Games. You should be the guide always. You know, you don't want to be the hero in the story. And I think as a coach or as a trainer, it's very important that you position yourself in that position. It's good for everybody, but there's never, you can't be two heroes in one story. And it's important as a trainer and as a coach, and for people that are working with trainers and coaches, like there's a trainer, I won't mention his name. Like, I told this at my business seminar back when I used to do them. Like, and I love him. Like, he's a great person. But my God, every time one of his clients does tremendous, I'm like, did you see what I did with so-and-so? I was like, oh, did you eat all their meals? Did you? I'm like, did you do all their training sessions? No, but I'm their fucking coach. I was like, yeah. I was like, good job. But taking full credit for what his clients would do. And he still does that to this day. Like, it's hilarious. But I'm like, you know, it's just not a great approach, because it doesn't really help anybody. Because the problem is, I actually have no problem with somebody doing that. If you want to have kind of the ego side and take it, I get that. But that also means that you have to take responsibility for all the people who don't get in good shape then. I'm like, I have no problem with you, even though I wouldn't do it, being, yeah, I got, did you see what I did with Johnny? He looks tremendous now. I'm like, brilliant. You know, but Sheila over there didn't hit her goal. It's like, oh yeah, but she didn't stick to the plan. I'm like, oh, but you can't fucking have your cake and eat it too. I was like, it's either all your fault or none of it's your fault. You know, whereas I just took the opposite approach, where I don't take responsibility for people that do amazing things. I don't. I'm like, you did it. But I also equally, from a selfish standpoint as well, I also don't take responsibility for when people don't follow what I've given them or don't follow the plan. I'll do my best to set up an environment so they can, but at the end of the day, if somebody won't stick to a nutritional plan or won't stick to a training program or is just making excuses left, right and center, I won't take responsibility for that either. Equally, when somebody does amazing things, and I think that approach works quite well as a trainer, and again, I'm biased, so I'm obviously going to say it works because it's what I do, and there's different fits for different people, different strokes for different folks, but that's generally the approach that is a good thing to look out for in a coach or in a trainer. Or if you're a coach or a trainer, realize that putting the responsibility on somebody else is a very helpful business strategy, but it's also very helpful from a coaching standpoint because it empowers other people to make the change themselves.
Yeah, true. And to follow up on that as well, I think it's important to list out the expectancies of both the client and the coach as well beforehand, just that they're in agreement of what's expected from both sides, and
Aligning expectations is everything.
Absolutely. Brian, I want to thank you for your time and thanks for having this conversation with me today. One last question is, where can people find you?
So if you're listening to podcasts, definitely check out my podcast, the Brian Keane Podcast. But I'm on everywhere. Instagram, TikTok at the minute. I'm all over TikTok at the minute. Brian Keane Fitness. I'm absolutely hooked on that. But podcast, Instagram, TikTok. But I'm on YouTube, Facebook. I'm on the whole lot. So whatever's the best fit. But definitely podcast. If you're listening to Carl's podcast here and you enjoy podcasts, go check out mine, the Brian Keane Podcast, and then Instagram and TikTok after that. And Carl, thank you so much again for having me on.
No problem at all. I'll make sure to leave a link below so anyone can just nice and conveniently click across. Thanks a million, Brian.
My pleasure. 3, 2, 1.